Hello, everybody, and welcome back to the Live Beyond podcast. My name is Jacqueline, and we are continuing our Living Missional series with Dr. Vanderpool this week. And before we get started, I just wanted to talk to you, Dr. V, a little bit about the book that you have written, Live Beyond, A Radical Call to Surrender and Serve. Can you tell us a little bit about it?
Absolutely. We're so glad to be here today. This is going to be a great podcast and really appreciate it so much. You know, we got a lot of questions in the past about, how did we go from living a life in America as a successful surgeon and all that that life entails to selling everything and moving to the poorest country in the Western Hemisphere? That's a big step. And so this book really answers that question. It talks about our background, where we came from, and then sort of the transition that God led us to get us where we are today. And there were many events that happened where he taught us things that we had to know to be able to live in a very, very challenging place. And so the Lord prepares us. And it takes sometimes a lifetime, but this book is about that preparation. And I hope it's a blessing to people. It was a blessing for me to write and just sort of share the stories that we had along the way that were exciting for us and really transformative for us. So that was sort of the background to the book there.
We love that. Well, if you are interested in reading the book, you can find it on Amazon or at our website, livebeyond.org. And again, the book is called Live Beyond, A Radical Call to Surrender and Serve. If you have already read it, we would love it if you could leave a review on Amazon or Goodreads or even BookBub, just letting us know what you thought about it. So let's go ahead and jump into today's episode. What is this one going to be about?
Well, we've been talking about living missionally. And this is a concept that I think is just so important for us as Christians to understand. You know, we're called not to be of the world. We're called to be out of the world, living in the world, but not be associated with the world. And so when you think about Jesus giving us the Great Commission, at the end of the Gospels, the Great Commission means that there's a mission implied. And so what we like to think about is that God has given all of us a mission to be a part of. Being able to incorporate that in our daily life is sort of the challenge. And so we have found that really living in Haiti and spreading the gospel is relatively easy because the people are very receptive. Many of these people have not heard the gospel. And so doing that is not hard. Doing it in the United States, just in your daily work schedule or school schedule, that can be a little bit more difficult. And so this series of podcast is talking about how we can live our lives in a missional way, that as we live our life, we are going about doing God's will and spreading the gospel.
Well, I'm excited for that. So this week's episode is developing an aptitude for missions. And I'm just going to take it all the way back to breaking down even the title. Let's talk even about what aptitude means.
That's a great question. You know, the word aptitude, as I'm using it, is developing skill sets, developing a mindset, an emotional set that provides the opportunity when you use those in the mission field. It provides an opportunity to bear fruit, to bear good fruit. And so that's what we're going to talk about today is how do you go about that? How do you get into a place where you're bearing good fruit? You know, we got a choice. We're going to bear good fruit or we're going to bear bad fruit. And Jesus makes that clear, you know, throughout his message. And so we have that choice. If we bear bad fruit, then we're not helping the kingdom. We're not being a part of the Great Commission. If we're bearing good fruit, that's what we're called to, is bearing good fruit. And if we have a mindset that is faulty, let's say we just don't have a skill set that's needed in the field, then we're not going to bear good fruit. You know, I think a lot of people think that just because they breathe and walk and don't drag their knuckles too badly, that they're going to be useful in the mission field. Well, I got to break it to you, honey. That is just not the case. There are a lot of people who really don't have a skill set that's needed. Now, they could, but it takes intentionality. It's not just because you live and breathe that you have a skill set to be bearers of good fruit in the mission field. So that's what we're going to talk about today, is how we can use our talents and how we can develop those talents to be maximally effective in the mission field.
So my question for you is, obviously, when you have a desire and a heart to go into missions, I think that that is oftentimes the first step that the Lord uses to get you to the mission field. But how do we develop that aptitude? You know, not just that I want to go, so I'm going to go, but I want to go, how can I prepare myself to go? How do you link that mindset between those two?
That's a great question. And, you know, I think one of the things that we've got to do is we've got to understand what the needs of the people are that we're ministering to. And so let's take Haiti, for instance, they have a big need for healthcare. And so if we want to go and minister to their needs from a healthcare standpoint, then we're going to have to develop skill sets in healthcare. We can't just take a biology course in high school and think that we're going to be useful to develop a healthcare industry. And, you know, this is really the way Jesus worked when he was on earth in his flesh. You know, he brought people to him by taking care of their needs, their physical needs. And he then ministered to them in a spiritual way. And that's what we're talking about here, is being able to minister to people's physical needs and then minister to them spiritually. So there's sort of two sets here. First of all, we have to have skill sets and a mindset to take care of people's physical needs. The first thing that we need to talk about, though, is we have to have a curiosity as to what their needs are. So we have to be able to be interested enough in the people to really delve into their problems. And so going, understanding the people group that you're ministering to, maybe it's homeless people in your town, you know, maybe it's expectant mothers in a low-income area, or maybe it's long-term missions in a place like Haiti. Going and understanding the people's backgrounds, understanding their real needs, not making assumptions. Oftentimes, as Americans, we think we have the solution to everybody's problems, right? And believe it or not, we don't. We really don't. And they sort of resent it a little bit when we try to force it on them. But if we will go and we'll spend time with people and we'll really talk to them, you know, we may think that, you know, a mother, for instance, is not taking her child in to see the doctor when they're sick because they're poor and, you know, they don't have money for it. That may be the case, but it also may be that she can't take off work, you know, and so there's a piece there that a ministry might be taking a child to the physician or ministering to them directly at home after hours. The solutions are going to come in very good questions that you ask of people. It may be that the mother's uncomfortable. Maybe her English, if you're dealing with Americans, maybe her English isn't sufficient and she's embarrassed. She can't communicate well, so she doesn't understand exactly what the doctor is saying. going with that person, serving as an interpreter, that kind of thing may be what she needs. And so going in and asking the good questions as far as what people need is key. So for instance, you know, in Haiti, it's a voodoo culture. And so we knew from statistics that maternal health was a huge problem in Haiti, enormous problem. They have one of the worst maternal mortality rates, you know, in the Western Hemisphere. And so we knew we wanted to improve that. Well, if we just said, we're just going to come in and we're going to put in an American clinic, American-style clinic, and that's going to solve all their problems, well, you know, that's really short-sighted. So going in there and talking with the women, talking with the nurses who have lived there for in their entire lives and understand the plight, coming up with solutions to their problems, it's enormous. And so we found, for instance, that most of our ladies couldn't read. And so if somebody was handing out tracts or booklets or something like that to educate them on maternal health, it didn't work. They couldn't understand it. So we also found, for instance, through talking with them, that they love to sing. And they love to sing songs that sort of help their education. And so we encourage them to come up with songs regarding elements of maternal health, right? And so they have songs that they sing each time they come that, you know, they put the words in there, and it's talking about how important breastfeeding is, okay? Well, you think, well, and I can't even on air talk about the words, but they're pretty funny. It's extremely effective, you know? It is a little embarrassing when I find myself humming the song later. I think, I probably shouldn't do that. But, you know, it's extremely effective. So it's things like that, that had we not asked the questions and really listened to the people, we wouldn't understand. So trying to park our assumptions, you know, aside and not deal with the assumptions, but then go in with an open mind and open ears to hear what they perceive the challenges to be will make you so much more effective. So you have to have that curiosity and that desire to really help the people, you know, to have a better life. Another example of how, you know, really being curious and listening to people to find out what their needs are. It was shown to us in our child nutrition program. So we have a large child nutrition program. We feed about 3,200 kids a day. Because there's such a tremendous element of malnutrition in our area, up to 40% of our children are malnourished. And so we had seen others institute feeding programs, and so we thought that'd be a good idea. We started a feeding program, and the people didn't like it. And so, you know, after a month or so, we went through, and people weren't eating the food. We noticed they weren't eating it, and we thought, this is crazy. It's nutritious. You know, we calculated how many carbohydrates and how much fat and protein and they needed, and, you know, this should be great. So we sat down with them and said, you know, what's up? Why aren't you guys, you know, eating this food? You guys are hungry. They said, it doesn't taste good. And I thought, well, there you go. I mean, I don't eat things that don't taste good either. So that was a bit of a surprise. And so instead of we had just, you know, gotten food, prepared it, and, you know, without their input. So the mistake there was assuming that since I liked it, that they're going to like it. Well, we wouldn't assume that about even members of our own family. You know, we right. have differences in taste, and assuming that if they're starving, they're going to eat it anyway. Well, that's sort of a arrogant position to take. And so we worked with the women and worked with other Haitians who were cooks and found a very tasty alternative that they really liked. that accomplish the goals of having the right amount of protein, right amount of carbohydrates, right amount of fat, that kind of thing. And they absolutely love it. I mean, they can't get enough on their plate now. It's just they have mountains of food on their plates. And of course, it just it makes us so happy to see them gaining weight. And we're seeing all the malnutrition being corrected. Had we not listened to the people, we would have never figured that out. And so another example that we have that, you know, just it's one of those these failures that you write down and realize the mistakes you made. We noticed the people didn't have clean water. And so, you know, they had hand-dug wells that were too shallow for the water to be clean. And so the soil in our area is very rocky. And so we thought, you know, we can purify this water with water purification systems, and we can employ Haitians to build these things. It took some construction for the base, and it would store water, and it would be clean. And these purification systems are wonderful. They clean the water dramatically. And so we started putting these systems out and in the different communities. And the feedback we got was they didn't like it. And we thought, how can you not like it? It's clean water. You don't have clean water. Now you have clean water. You don't like it. We don't understand. Well, they didn't trust it, even though we did water testing and showed that it was clean. And so we finally sat down and said, okay, well, what do you guys want? What is it that, you know, that you have in mind? They said, we just want water wells. And so even though the water wells were more expensive, a lot more involved, you know, as far as digging them, we said, okay, well, then we're going to go with water wells. And I think we've drilled 97 water wells to date. And they just love them. There's no problem at all. They're used to water wells. If we had asked them initially, they probably would have told us, just do water wells. And so we're just doing water wells now. And, and so now they have enough clean water, you know, for all the people in our area. So it's just things like that. And we've made the mistakes of not listening. And we found that when we do really sit down with the people and listen, that we're able to do things that are fruitful. You know, if you look at it, you say, you know, all three of these examples I've given, initially it wasn't fruitful. You know, we had worked it, you know, from an American standpoint, it was great. Scientifically, it was great. Medically, it was great. But it wasn't a fruitful work. And so that's what we're called to do. We're called to do things. You know, I think another name for fruitful is going to be effective. You know, it's a very effective thing. You're trying to solve the fact that they don't have sufficient water or they have food insecurity. Well, you've got to do it in a way that's effective. And so involving the people in that process who you're serving is just integral. That allows us to have that aptitude. And that's what we're talking about is not assuming that you know, not assuming, even though you may have advanced degrees in the subject, not assuming that that's going to be the workable solution, but going in and having the correct aptitude to learn. And so that humility, that learning process, that listening process is very important.
Mm. So clearly it is so important to be prepared for what your daily work will be like. Whether you're on the mission field doing long-term missions or if you have found a way to live missionally where you currently are. But what are some ways that you can be prepared emotionally, spiritually, and mentally? Because I think oftentimes that preparation is forgotten And so when you get there, and I'm talking from a lens of long-term missions, because I've been there.
You've been there, that's right.
I've been there. That I was not prepared emotionally, spiritually, and mentally all the time. And so my question is, you know, what can you do starting now to prepare yourself? You know, that might be years away, or it might never come, but you're going to be living missionally where you are. What are some steps that we can do to prepare ourselves that way?
That's a great question. And, you know, I think that there are a number of things, and they all fall under the umbrella of loving the people. And so if you take that, and I want to spend more time on another podcast talking about loving the people, but if you look at that, and if you say everything that falls underneath loving the people, all the topics there, that's what we're talking about. And so, you know, to love someone, you've got to understand them. And that's a big part of them. You have to understand what it is they want, what it is they need. And so that's what we've been talking about, listening to them. The other thing that I think love entails is you've got to get to know the people. You've got to spend personal time with the people. Go to their houses, eat with them, be a part of their culture, not be separated from their culture. And that is cross-cultural, you know, but it also talks to other types of people that you're trying to reach. Maybe people who don't have the same belief system that you do. Maybe they don't have, you know, the same outlook on life that you do. Those kinds of people looking for understanding, looking for a position where you both can agree on and understand each other, I think is vital. You know, part of that in the cross-cultural world is learning their language. Absolutely, incredibly important. You really can't get to know somebody on a deep level if you don't speak their language. You absolutely have. The language itself is going to educate you on their outlook on life, the words that they use, the way their language flows, the way they, you know, they express themselves, absolutely very, very important. So when you love somebody like this, you love the people that you're serving, you learn their language. Maybe that's a little metaphorical. I mean, in Haiti, we have to learn Creole, and that's pretty actual. But there may be some sort of the language of people may be a metaphor. And you have to understand that, you know, metaphorical analogy. You know, Jesus did that. You know, when the woman at the well came to him, you know, he looked at her and he knew all about her. You know, he knew she'd been married a bunch of times. He knew that, you know, that she was an outcast. And yet he loved her and talked to her and ministered to her. And so I think that's a good example of how, you know, we can love people. You know, I think that involving them in the solutions is important. You know, it's pretty arrogant to think that we know all the solutions for all the world. That's a pretty typical American viewpoint, you know, and so yeah. Letting go of that and bringing them into that decision-making process and really listening and making every effort to then go with that idea. You know, they probably have much better ideas than even we do, you know, about things like that. You know, one of the things that that I think is important too is to understand their history. You know, their history really helps you see why they do the things they do and why they are the way they are, why they have that worldview that they have. And you know, the United States has got such a different worldview than most places. You know, we've for generations, we've been the most powerful nation in the world. And so our worldview sort of stems from one of power. We've been able to subjugate and control other countries really, without difficulty. And so our worldview involves that. Our economy has been the best in the world, for decades and decades. Money is power to an American mindset. That may be absolutely the opposite of the people that you're serving. And so, for instance, in Haiti, none of those things are true. They don't have a good economy. They've never been controlling. They've always been controlled, in fact. Their life is one of constant struggle to just stay alive, So could not be further from the worldview of someone from the United States. And so understanding that that's their thought process, it just opens up so much as far as meeting their needs, as well as being able to minister the gospel to them. It's difficult to, you don't minister the gospel to a Haitian the same way as you do, an upper class American. It just doesn't work. You've got people that think completely differently. Neither of them is wrong. I'm not saying that, but it's different, and acknowledging that difference is so important. Just understand how they view leadership. Leadership in the United States is admired and lauded. In Haiti, that's not the case. Leadership is suspect because they've been abused by leadership for so long. So just things like that, I think, will encourage love for the people. You start to understand them. You start to understand their needs, their desires, their dreams. And many times they have the same dreams for their children as we do for ours. Yeah, they want absolutely. Success and that kind of thing. So I think that all plays into the aptitude. If you come over, and you start ministering and you don't develop these things, you just won't have the aptitude to be successful. And, one of the scriptures that I love in 1 Corinthians 15, it's just a wonderful scripture, verse 58. It says, "Therefore, my dear brothers, be steadfast, be immovable, always excelling in the Lord's work." And that's excellent work is something that oftentimes is missing in missions.
I'm working, but it might not be excellent.
It's not excellent. That's right. And unfortunately, I don't see it as something that is even aspired to. I mean, people really aren't thinking, "I need to do an excellent work." It may be because they're barely surviving themselves, and not being critical, but we need to always excel, in the Lord's work. And so we want to have our best. We bring our best, to the Lord's work. And I think that's what that scripture is saying. Because we don't want to spend our life being unfruitful. And so many believers spend their lives taking care of themselves. And that's completely unfruitful. We're talking about taking care of others and ministering the gospel to them.
Well, I mean, from what it sounds like to me, breaking it down into kind of bullet points, it's be humble, love Jesus, love people, ask good questions, be prepared, and then do what Paul did and be all things to all people. Be willing to be all things. And that means that he had to learn things to be those things. And so really just being willing to put the work in, to be prepared to meet the needs that people really have, not the needs that you're perceiving them to have. Right. And I think that you just absolutely nailed it, because I mean, how many times, you know, in the examples that you gave, you know, did we think that we were with the best intentions possible, you know, going in and being helpful and then realizing that's not what was needed. And that was a waste of time. And, you know, so I really appreciate this, because I think that we do need the reminder to have this desire to not just do a lot of work, but to excel in the work that we do. And I think you nailed it. I love it.
Well, you know, I think that we need to bring excellence to missions. I think that is something that's severely lacking. You know, we need to prepare ourselves. If we want to be medical missionaries, we need to get a medical degree, you know.
yeah.
We can't just go play doctor over there.
Right.
That just doesn't work. And it's an insult to the people. It's harmful, and people do this. I mean, there's examples even today of people going over without any medical training and providing medical care to people. And, you know, that's terribly inappropriate. It's unfruitful, and it actually hurts the cause of Christ. May have been done with a good heart, and that's important, but it's not the only important thing. You know, the excellence and the fruit is what is important. And so we have to do things that we can, that we're prepared to do, that we have the gifting to do. And a lot of times that gifting, you know, is worked through maybe an education. You know, that gifting the Lord gives you, that you are able to delineate it further, you know, by your education. So... So focusing on things that you have the aptitude for, I think, is very, very important.
I love it.
One final scripture that I'd love to incorporate is Titus 3:14. And this is a great scripture. And it's, you know, it's one that we take to heart. And it says, "And our people must also learn to devote themselves to good works for cases of urgent need, so that they will not be unfruitful." You know, I love that. I mean, that's it's a, you know, it's a mindset that when there's an urgent need, you devote yourself to good works. And I think there's several pieces to this that are so important. You know, devoting yourself to good works, that means this is a constant, habitual part of your life. It's not like, hey, we're going to serve in the soup kitchen on Thanksgiving once a year. It's not that. It's every day that your eyes open, you're devoting yourself to good works. You're taking care of others. You're serving others. You're providing for the needs of others. And I think that is so important, you know, to develop that and encourage other people to develop that.
I think that is incredible. Well, thank you so much for joining me today and for continuing our Living Missional series. This was episode 7, so please feel free to check out all the other episodes that we have on this series. Dr. V, thank you so much for joining me today. It's always a pleasure.
Thank you so much for having me. This is great.
And again, please do not forget to go check out Dr. Vanderpool's book, Live Beyond: A Radical Call to Surrender and Serve. It is on Amazon. It is also on our website, livebeyond.org. If you're interested in learning a little bit more about what we do at Live Beyond, about our maternal health program, our child nutrition program, our water wells, please feel free to go check that out again at our website, livebeyond.org. We would love for you to learn more about what we do. If you're interested in donating, you can donate there at the Give Now button and sponsor some of our mothers or children. But that is it for this week. I hope you have a wonderful day, and don't forget to go out and live beyond.